Hello, everybody. This is Scott Yates, Director of Communications and Producer Relations for the Washington Grain Commission, here with episode 103 of Weed All About It, or what I'm calling Glenn Squires Lives, Breathes, and Talks Wheat. Nothing against the CEOs of other state grain organizations, but you would be hard-pressed to find an executive who works as tirelessly on behalf of his state's farmers as Squires. And I should know, working alongside of him for the last 10 years. For those who don't know its history, the Washington Grain Commission held its first meeting 60 years ago in late April 1958. The organization was then known as the Washington Wheat Commission. In 2009, when barley was brought under its auspices, the name was changed. The organization has had three CEOs in its history: Scott Hansen until 1986, Tom Mick until 2012, and Glenn Squires, who took over from Mick after working as an analyst and then vice president of the WGC. While every wheat state in the nation has its particular struggles and opportunities, I would argue that no region has more of both than the Pacific Northwest. That means the number of issues Squires faces on a daily basis are often more numerous than some wheat executives might encounter in a month. It is not just Squires' juggling abilities I admire. His organizational skills are superb. Of course, this is coming from the office slob. Seeing the gleaming wood laminate of Squires' clean desk at the end of the week, more than a dozen files lined expertly on the nearby credenza, fills me with envy and makes me wish I was a little less creative and a little more well-ordered. But perhaps it's good an office has both ends of the spectrum represented. Squires possesses a wealth of information about wheat, and this podcast is intended to spread some of that wealth around. Ahead, you'll hear Squires talk about the three ongoing challenges he can never lose sight of as CEO: the latest dam breaching debate, why the Pacific Northwest should applaud the recently negotiated USMCA treaty, what's the positive news on the hard white wheat front, and why the term clean label is growing in importance. All that and more is coming up about my conversation with the CEO of the Washington Grain Commission on November 7th, 2018, which took place in my messy office. Abbreviation alert: you'll hear Squires and I talk about the CPTPP ahead. That's the Comprehensive and Progressive Trans-Pacific Partnership Trade Agreement, forged among the remaining nations of the Trans-Pacific Partnership, or TPP. President Trump withdrew from the TPP in January 2016, shortly after he was elected. I began my conversation with Squires by asking about the proliferation of issues facing Eastern Washington's wheat industry and what he thought was behind the increase.
Well, the world is getting more complicated, not less. The Grain Commission has responded by becoming more sophisticated, which often means taking on new responsibilities. An example: so when the commission decided that the best way to get the most bang for the buck was leveraging it through other partners, a lot more players were suddenly involved, and it takes up a lot more time, but there's a lot more potential.
So how do you decide which issues you'll dig into and which ones you'll just let drop by the wayside?
To a great extent, the board decides where I'll concentrate. There's always top priorities, and sometimes they shift around. But we have to pay attention to the priorities down the list, because in any given point in time, they're going to be number one.
Right now, what are the core issues that come hell or high water have to be addressed?
I think trade, transportation, which includes dams, and research.
Okay. We'll come back to trade, but first I'm really interested in the dams. How important are the dams to Eastern Washington wheat growers?
So the dams and the river navigation is as important to Eastern Washington as the I-5 corridor is to those on the west side. If you took out I-5, you're going to have a lot of problems, congestion problems. And if you take out the dams and the river transportation corridor, we're going to have lots of problems.
You're currently on the executive committee of the Pacific Northwest Waterways Association, which everyone abbreviates PNWA. But you've been observing the river system debate for almost 30 years. Now, as I look at the dam breachers' agenda, I believe nothing will satisfy them except breaching the dams. And if one path toward that goal fails, then they'll simply try another. How do you fight that?
I think you hit the nail on the head. It's saving salmon doesn't appear to be the end goal. The end goal is removing dams, breaching dams. But in reality, the way you fight that is with accurate information and just being as persistent in our belief and the facts as they are in theirs.
Okay. All right. So now you're talking about fighting it with information. But there was a full-page ad that ran in the Spokesman Review and the Walla Walla Union Bulletin. It said that truck rail is 24% more fuel efficient than truck barge. Now, I think the reality is exactly the opposite. How do you fight misinformation like that?
You fight it with the correct information. And actually, we've gone back, and that was a line taken out of a document that was based on some assumptions, that those assumptions are not accurate. It is true that barges are more fuel efficient, less fuel consumption than rail. I mean, nobody really argues that. But, you know, sometimes a piece of information can be taken out, and that's played up as the facts, and it's wrong. And so you correct that misinformation.
Do you believe that the latest calls for dam breaching are directly the result of the orca baby that was born and then carried by her mother for 3 weeks?
It started a long time before that, but certainly gathered steam, and I think people are using that as a way to, you know, drum up support and you know, activism, whatever you want to call for breaching dams. It doesn't mean that you throw out good science. NOAA Fisheries has released information just recently showing how overall salmon runs in the Snake Columbia River are increasing. And those salmon runs, Puget Sound, north, south, in western Washington, and even in Canada, are decreasing overall. You know, they're not doing well. I mean, it's always easy to look outside your backyard and find the problem that, you know, it's someplace else, but really, what's being done with the dams, you know, the survival rate through the dams, and the dams' ability actually for us to monitor fish and to see how they're doing. Frankly, a lot is being done, and the survival rate is actually quite high.
Do we really need dams, Glenn? I mean, we've got this great rail system. BNSF is running trains through here all the time. And are we using up our political capital by continuing to defend dams?
We absolutely need the river system as a transportation capacity. You know, there's only so many trains that can go through the Columbia Gorge. The demand and the movement of grain going through from eastern Washington, northern Idaho, southern Idaho, Oregon, going down the river, really cannot all go on the rail. Rail has capacity constraints even now, and the river does not have capacity constraints.
Very good. So switching gears to trade, how relieved are you with the news that the U.S. and Japan will begin work on a bilateral trade agreement?
Very relieved. Since we were not part of the TPP discussion and an agreement, Japan and Australia, Canada were, you know, the U.S. would have been on the path to lose a large portion of our Japanese market over time. And you know, Japan clearly is, over time, is our number one market. So the announcement of negotiations toward a new bilateral trade agreement, it's good news. That's good news for U.S. farmers, and particularly us here in the Pacific Northwest.
But isn't there a timing element that's involved here, Glenn? I mean, don't these bilateral trade negotiations have to be done fairly quickly because the CPTPP... the revised agreement is going to go into effect at the end of the year?
There have been enough countries sign on to the CPTPP that it's moving forward. Our indication from the administration is that they're sitting down with the Japanese and there's a path forward for movement on a bilateral that seems very positive, that we are going to be able to get back into to this equal footing with Canada and Australia relative to the tariff or the markup. And in fact, at the recent national meeting, both the National Association of Wheat Growers and U.S. Wheat Associates passed motions requesting that that piece of information or that position be conveyed to U.S. Trade Representative, that we be placed on equal footing. And I think that that'll happen.
Wonderful, wonderful. So NAFTA 2.0, which is officially called the USMCA Treaty between the U.S., Mexico, and Canada, was recently approved by all parties. Is there anything we up here in the Northwest get out of that agreement?
Absolutely. Mexico last year was the number one market for U.S. wheat. If you look at a rising tide and more opportunity for wheat to go into more markets, that certainly helps us in the Pacific Northwest. If you include Idaho, obviously, in the PNW, I mean, there's South Idaho wheat that often is railed into Mexico as well. So that's positive.
All right, all right. I know that what's been going on between the U.S. and China is very complicated and convoluted, but, you know, can you sort of simplify for us what's going on with China with regard to the grain trade?
Most everyone knows that it's been going tit for tat, back and forth, kind of an escalation of a trade war. China's dug their heels in, the U.S. has dug their heels in. You know, they're not buying wheat. They haven't purchased any wheat since last March. We were increasing our sales to China up to over 300,000 tons last year. This year it's zero. You know, they're not buying soybeans. That is a challenge for U.S. agriculture, but, you know, at the same time, the wheat industry has, we have our challenges with China as well. In order to get into WTO, they agreed to import 9.6 million metric tons of wheat from all sources. Well, they haven't done that. They haven't lived up to that. As soon as they got into the WTO, their imports went almost to zero. China is subsidizing their farmers, wheat farmers, over $10 a bushel for production. Well, that's clearly trade distorting. And so the wheat industry actually took those two elements to the U.S. Trade Representative and to make a complaint at the WTO. So the wheat industry has its challenges relative to, you know, it's not all intellectual property theft. Everybody has their challenges. You know, our goal is that all of the negotiation take place and everybody solve the issues, and we'll be able to eventually export our wheat. There's clearly a growing demand in China. China produces a mid-protein range wheat, so they have to import weak gluten wheat, which is soft white, and they have to import their high-protein wheat, the hard red springs, to blend with theirs or to make products, because they don't have the wheat to be able to make those products. So I see tremendous potential for increased export to China.
I hope it comes to fruition. So I'm going to switch gears here again, and we're going four-wheeling question sort of out of the blue. I've been writing about hard white wheat since it became the newest wheat classification in the early 1990s. I have a soft spot for that hard class. I'm wondering whether you have any updates on where we stand with hard white wheat.
Well, as you know, here locally, ADM in Spokane had a small hard white program, and it was effective. There was, you know, they were buying hard white, and with a premium to the producers, they recognized there was a value in taking the hard white and blending it with hard red winter, or even using it as whole white wheat. You know, here in the Northwest, it's just really struggled. Elsewhere in the country, Ardent Mills has a program going where they're contracting with Acres in Colorado. Kansas is growing more and more hard white. A lot of it's going to Nigeria. So there is demand. What kind of happened here in Washington, the gentleman at ADM that was running, Bob French, died. That program ended. But there's recently renewed effort to increase hard white to our overseas markets. And actually, Taiwan came to us. They met with Oregon and Idaho, Washington farmers at a North Asia marketing conference and said, hey, we want to import hard white wheat. Okay, it takes time. You send samples and containers. They work. And actually, we're close. A local elevator company has got some hard white that one of the companies over there feels like, you know, will really satisfy a need, and so it's moving forward. I think there's great interest still. One of the issues in Taiwan is they're looking at the potential of chlorination being banned, and so rather than hard red winter, they would need hard white. So anyway, I think there's tremendous potential for hard white. It's got to be demand driven. You know, we can't produce it and push it out. It has to be pulled. And some of that may even be through contracting acres.
Do you think that contracting acres is really something that's going to happen? Because everything that I ever hear is it costs more to contract acres and we can't get buyers to pay more money for our wheat.
It depends on how much that buyer really wants it. And if they see value in contracting acres, then they'll do it. They'll make agreements. You know, they would have to have some long-term agreements.
When we're talking about value in this way, what do you mean? What value do they see in our wheat versus wheat from the Ukraine or Russia?
There's a lot of elements of value. One of those is, and it really has to do with clean labels.
You're going to have to explain clean labels.
So a clean label has to do with companies that essentially want on the label water, salt, yeast, wheat. They don't want to have to list additives in order to get the wheat to perform the way it needs to perform to make a product.
Are clean labels rising in profile overseas, or is this just something that's done in the U.S. because we're all crunchy granola types?
It's across the board. There are some countries that it may not be quite as prevalent, but many Asian countries, clean labels are becoming much more important. Japan, Korea, Taiwan, I mean, they're really putting a lot of emphasis on clean labels, but just on purity of the wheat. You know, they don't want chemical residues, and so yeah, it's really increasing actually across the board.
Which is really another reason for our emphasis at the WGC on growing quality varieties of wheat in the Pacific Northwest, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
U.S. Wheat Associates has had a lot of retirements and a lot of new young people coming on board. What do you make of the new look? Are we still getting our money's worth for membership?
Yes, I believe we are. Because we're so engaged with the overseas market, 90% of what we produce goes overseas, and so it's incumbent on us to really interact and be engaged with them. And, you know, the enthusiasm, the technical abilities, they have great personalities, and they're very personable with our overseas buyers and interact very well. Sometimes, you wish you could clone some of them to have some more, but we have tremendous representation overseas with the U.S. wheat. And a lot of that is technical driven. I mean, it's marketing expertise, it's milling expertise, it's baking. You know, the fact that we, U.S. Wheat, and the commissions actually helped to fund this, that we're providing technical service to the flour millers and the bakers, that's something that other countries don't do. That's a trade servicing, a marketing component that really they turn to us for help when they have issues. A miller is having an issue, a baker. You know, we have those technical people that will go into the mill to help solve the issues. And Australia, Canada, they don't do that. And so not only do we have good quality wheat, but we have the expertise to help people learn how to use it the best and to solve their challenges.
On another trade question, Idaho and Oregon and Washington have all gone together to pay for a Latin American technician to help jumpstart the markets in that region. Who is the technician that's been hired, and how will he go about enlarging our markets?
So I'll just back up a little bit. The three states are funding the activities of this person. U.S. Wheat hired the person. We're helping to fund his activities. And I'll back up just a little bit further. A couple of years ago, we we actually are paying a consultant, a milling consultant, and his name is Andrea Saturno. And his main focus was to help flour millers in Latin America regarding the blending of soft white wheat and hard wheats, soft white wheat with Australian, with Argentine, you know, any other wheat, basically to promote soft white and its ability to enhance products. So step forward, in South America, the South American countries, we realized U.S. wheat, you know, their challenge was they needed more technical support down there. And so the three states went together again and helped to support hiring another technician. So this technician is more on the baking and, you know, the downstream. And they went through a big search process and actually ended up hiring Andres Saturno, which is the son of Andrea. Highly qualified. It's a great tandem workforce in terms of technical ability that we have to help solve issues relative to the use of our wheat in Latin America and to help promote our wheat. So we see great potential. And actually, our sales to Chile, Guatemala, Colombia, you know, they're actually increasing.
Wonderful, wonderful. So lately, the Philippines has been at the top of our top 10 list of importers of soft white. Is that because they're buying more soft white or because Korea and Japan are buying less?
It's because they're buying more. Dramatic growth. They're consuming more. Their GDP is increasing. Their population is increasing. So they are essentially just buying more wheat. Japan and Korea, really, while their populations are aging, the growth, population growth is not so much, but the demand is actually remaining the same. And in some ways, some areas sometimes increasing a little bit. And the reason that is because Japan, for example, as the population is getting older, they are moving toward more convenience foods. And so their consumption of bread products, packaged products, cakes, cookies, as opposed to rice that they have to boil, you know, they want more convenience food. So that's why the demand is actually remaining the same, even though population is going down. But in terms of the Philippines, you know, really all of Southeast Asia is growing demand. And, you know, we're paying attention to those growing needs because there's competition. Australia sees that growth. Canada, they compete with us. Even Black Sea, Ukraine, Russia, they all see this growth. And so we're in a competition with those other suppliers in that market.
Which is more important, research or marketing?
I think they go hand in hand because we've seen other parts of the country where they they chased yield, and as a result, buyers stopped buying their wheat. And so we don't want to be in that situation. We want to make sure that we're growing a high-quality product. And there's lots of elements of research, the variety development, quality aspect of it. But, yeah, research clearly is important.
To reiterate, the three challenges Squire said he can never lose sight of as WGC CEO are trade, transportation, and research. You might not think juggling three balls is all that difficult until you realize that each of those topics has dozens of facets. But with Squires in the lead, the WGC's Office of Executives and Staff keeps track of them all. That's all the time we have. Please join me again next week for another episode of the Washington Grain Commission-sponsored podcast, Wheat All About It!
We're all children of a special treat, a miracle of nature that we just call wheat. A crop that's in the Bible, a crop that's in our bread, a crop that's filled our bellies and held us in good stead. Through a history of starvation in times of want and woe, wheat has been our savior, our grub, our glue, our dough. There's always lots of problems when we have enough to eat, but there's only one dilemma when it's not enough wheat. We feed you.